Right. Thank you very much for coming out. Very nice showing for this class. It's the first in a four-part series in which we're going to be learning the Book of Bereishis from a global perspective. And from a global perspective means that my goal, my aim, is to share with you a number of textual themes that are brought out in the text over the course of spanning chapters. In each class today, we're going to be looking at Adam and Noach, which is essentially the first two parshas of the Book of Bereishis. And then I don't remember the exact breakdown, but each of the subsequent classes which we're going to have has a global topic which we're going to be looking at. There is a handout, so if you didn't get it, it's on the table. And that will help guide most of what we're going to be looking at today. Okay, so the Book of Bereishis, just to make an overall comment, you know, it's probably pretty well known that Rashi's first comment on the Book of Bereishis is, why does the Torah start here instead of starting actually at this week's Parsha, right, with HaChodesh HaZelechem, the first essential mitzvah given to the Jewish people? And Rashi gives an answer, which is Koch Ma'asa V'Gid Li'Amo, that the whole point of the Book of Bereishis is to show God's strength and to show that God chose Abraham's family for a particular mission. It's not because Avraham is better than anybody else. It's just Avraham is unique. Now, maybe in Avraham's case, we could say better. But certainly Avraham's children aren't better. But they are Avraham's children. And so, as a result of the unique relationship that Avraham forged with God, so we need to have the Book of Bereishis. But that begs the question, so why not just start with Avraham? Right? Go skip to the end of Parshas Noach. Abraham is given, at least he's following his father's mission. His father decided, it's like what I remember Menachem Liebtag called Terach, the first Zionist. He decided to move to Canaan, and he got halfway there and stopped. That's what he calls the first Zionist. It's a very tongue-in-cheek comment. You have to know about Menachem Liebtag. So, but we don't start there. We start with Bereishis, and Bereishis has creation. Bereishis has Garden of Eden. Bereishis has Kain and Hevel. That's that parsha, and then the very end of the parsha leads into the need that God feels to destroy essentially the world that He has created, and to replace it with a population that is fathered by Noach, and the world continues from there until we see Abraham. And of course, Abraham is mentioned in Pirkei Avos. Many of us might be familiar with the Mishnah in Avos, which describes that there are 10 generations from Adam until Noach, and at the time of Noach, God said, enough's enough, time to rebuild. And from Noach until Adam, the same thing happened, until Abraham, the same thing happened, but God said, you know what, I have Abraham, so I don't need to destroy the world, I'm just going to continue a mission, particularly with this man. Okay, so how do we answer that question, though? What's the point of Bereishis and Noach, these two chapters? So I once saw a comment, I don't remember if his website has been revamped, but when Rabbi Sachs was the chief rabbi of England, so he had a website, something to the effect of chiefrabbi.org, something like that. So I remember once reading a speech that has been, a transcription of a speech that he had given, which was followed by a Q&A. And in the Q&A, somebody asked him a question, and he made the following insight. He said, you know, the book is for the Jewish people. He says, well, hold on a second. You look at the first 11 chapters in the Torah, try to find a Jew in them. You can't. Okay, it doesn't exist. We can even argue whether Avram is considered a Jew. You know, we call Avram the first Jew. But Avram was an Ivri, and the idea of being a Jew was really forged at Sinai, what we call a Jew now. It was really B'nai Yisrael becoming a nation at Sinai. So he said the first 11 chapters are God's experiment with humanity without a direction that was essentially forged by Abraham. And what is it, if we were to judge it on a scale of yay or nay, the first 11 chapters of the Torah? Yeah, mostly nay. Mostly nay. Now, does that mean that people who aren't Jewish don't have a chance? No, of course not. I don't think that's the case. It just means that that period of time and the way that people made the associations which they made, and their disrespect for one another, their non-acknowledgement of God, altogether created for a really a travesty for man, and a destruction of mankind as we know. I mean, just think about Noah. Noah, by all rights, from the way that he's described, should have been a person who saved the world the way that Avram saved the world. Right? The mission of Avram should have said 10 generations from Adam to Noah, and Noah saved the world. Right? He took on the merit of everybody's demerit. He channeled whatever needed to happen in order to save humanity. Well, he did save humanity, but it was just through the 8 people that were on the boat. So that is also, one can say, a failure. And that's one of the reasons why Noach, as I'm sure many are familiar, Yesh Dorshim L'Shevach, Yesh Dorshim L'Gnai, some look at Noach in a positive light, and some look at Noach in a less positive light, owing to the fact that, especially when you compare him to Abraham, in terms of the way Abraham advocated on behalf of the people of Sodom, most notably, and we don't see that with Noach at all. Now, that's not to say that Noach didn't advocate, we just don't know it, it's not in the Torah. But this is the background to the bulk of the book of Bereishis. So with that in mind, let's take a look at what the book presents to us. And if you follow with the sheet which I gave you, you'll see that there are a number of parallels that the book of Bereishis presents to us. Okay, I'm actually going to look at the top box and then the lower box, and then we'll spend the bulk of the time looking at the area which I entitled Sins. Okay, now, one thing is important to note. When you look at the opening of the book of Bereishis, the Ramban says this, I heard it most expressed by Rabbi Yehuda Amital in Zichron Levracha of Yeshivat Haratzion, who would say that, regarding the book of Bereishis, and most notably the account of creation, I should say, not the book, but the account of creation in the first chapter, he would say the following. If you look at Pasuk Beis on page 2, you'll say, he would say in Hebrew, Ani lo mevin shum davar b'parshat Bereishit. I don't understand anything in the Parshat Bereishit. Second line, where it describes what's in the land, he says, Ani lo yodea mazeh tohu, Ani lo yodea mazeh vohu, Ani lo yodea mazeh v'ruach elokim rachefet al panei amayim. He says, I don't know what any of these words mean. One thing I know from Parshat Bereishit is that God created the world. That's the only thing I know. Okay, and the truth is that if you look through the commentaries on this stuff, they're all over the place. I mean, I've been giving a Parsha class for a few years now, using a specific commentary. And I remember one year opening up to Parsha Bereishis, and what I try to do is go through the whole commentary on the Parsha and pick out things which I think are good to share in the class. So I remember printing up all the comments from one of these commentaries. It was about 90 pages on the first chapter of Bereishis. Okay, guess what I skipped that week? Yeah, we aren't even going to go there. I mean, just first of all, there's no time. Secondly, how am I going to pick out from that? It's impossible to understand. And many commentaries go that route of just saying a lot, and hoping to walk away with something. Okay, at least on the simple level, we have depicted here on day one, and you can also follow the chart. But I want to show you a few words that are here. You'll see that on the first day that's described, you have Choshech. God says Yehi Or. Choshech, it means that there's already darkness, and God says let there be light, and he distinguishes between Pasuk Dalet Bein Haor uVein HaChoshech. Okay, that's between light and darkness. So that's the first thing which we see here, and that's what I wrote on day one. You have light and dark. I'm not getting into the question of how do you have light without a sun. I'm not getting into that. Okay, day two, page 4. Is he rakia v'sochamayim b'mavdil b'mayin l'mayin? This is going to be a rakia, which is called either a sky, a firmament, which is going to divide between the waters above and the waters below. Okay, what do the waters above mean? The clouds, the atmosphere, whatever. In other words, there's a domain up there, and there's a domain down below. In both cases, water is present. Okay, that's all we're told about day two. Day three, gather water so that we can see dry land. Dry land, and what else is there going to be? Pasuk Yud Aleph, Tachei Aretz, Desha, Esev, Mazria, Zera, Eitz, Pri, Yosef, Pri, Lemino, Asher, Zarabo, Ala, Aretz, Vayichein. There's going to be trees and fruit, and this is all very nice, and the grass is going to grow. And that's the end of day three. Okay? Comes day four, and we see that if you look on the chart, you'll see that day four, day five, and day six is filling whatever is listed on day one and day two and day three in a very clear parallel. Okay, on day four, you see the words Or and Choshech repeated over and over again.
That there's going to be, for example, Me'oros on page 6, the second line, we're talking about the creation of the sun and the moon and their placement in their particular, you know, settings in the cosmos, okay? And God sets them up, the Shnei Me'oros HaGdolim. Then one of them is going to be L'Memshalas HaYom, to work in the day, and one is going to be L'Memshalas HaLaila, to work in the night. Of course, that's the sun and the moon. And what we saw before is that God had called, in day one, God had called L'Or Yom V'L'Choshech HaLaila. So that's day and night. Now, again, I'm not getting into the question of how you have light without the sun. It's obviously a different kind of light. And there's a light which is daytime, and there's a light which is nighttime. And the truth is that in this week's parsha as well, we see a concept of a darkness which is not the darkness of night. It's a different kind of darkness, okay? In the plague of darkness, so such a thing exists, and that's created in the order of the world. Day five is. So you see, you have the word rakia there. You have the word mayim there. These are things which we saw in day two. And so the birds which will fill the sky and the creatures which will fill the water are all mentioned here. Finally, you have day six, in which there are very many parallels to the way things were described when the trees were growing and filling the land. Let me see. Okay, you have the word. For example, you have the word aretz repeating itself a number of times. Chayso aretz lamina, ve'asamos chayasa aretz lamina, ve'asabema. Ve'es kol remes ha'adama, the things of the ground. Okay, then we have something which is a little bit of an anomaly. It doesn't really fit in with the rest of everything else, and that is the creation of man, and that is described here through Pasuk Chaf Ches, and then look in Pasuk Chaf Tes, you'll see, Hine Nasati Lachem is called Esev Zorea Zera Asher Alpanei Kal Aretz, Ve'ez Kol Eitz Asher Bo Pri Eitz Zorea Zera Lachem Yel Lachla. He's described, the Torah here is describing what God is giving to man for man to use for man's benefit, and that is all the trees that were described in on day three, and all of the fruits that were described on day three. The animals can know all the vegetation as well. Okay, and that's what we have for day six. Now, what's stuck here in the middle of all of this is this seemingly strange creation of a different kind of being than what you saw, for example, on day five. Day five, you saw the birds and the fish, which are going to literally fill the water and fill the sky. Okay? Day six, you have animals, and the animals are going to fill the earth, natural habitat. But what is man? Is man going to live in the earth in the same kind of natural habitat? Man's unique. Man is unique. And the way that it's described here is, God says, Na'aseh Adam, let us make man. Now, who is God talking to? Now, that's a long conversation that many of the commentaries try to figure out. Is God talking to the angels? Is God talking, you know, there's a, I remember once, when I, not once, when I was in camp, there was a the learning director in camp was a very wonderful man, but he could come off as being a very strict disciplinarian, and he would often talk about himself as we, right? We are going to check to see if you are at the learning group on time. We will decide whether you get to go to the night activity. We will decide. Who's we? A committee? It's a committee of one. So maybe there's an element of that too. Not that God is needs to pretend to anybody, but. Anyway, the point is that kind of language opens the door to questions, and many, many commentaries do address them. Okay, so what we have here is a depiction of creation which is presented to us in a harmonious kind of way, where it's divided into two sections very clearly, one which is dedicated to creating a base environment, and the second half, which is created to filling that environment. And that could be a metaphor for just, anything in life, right? That, if what was the line in Field of Dreams? If you build it, he will come. But anyway, they will come, okay, right? And that's the same thing with the world. You build it, you make it the right kind of setup for that which needs to fill it, then hopefully in the right kind of, with the right kind of attitude, and behavior, the world can achieve great things. But look very carefully at what man is instructed here. Pasuk 25, Chafei. Okay? Vayomer Elohim, Vayivarech Osam Elohim, rather, God blessed them. Did I say Chafei? I meant Chafches. Sorry, this is what happens when I'm not feeling well. I can't see. Okay, 28 on page 8. Vayomer, Vayivarech Osam Elohim, Vayomer Elohim. God blessed them and said to them, Vayomer Elohim Elohim, God says to them, Peru Uruvu Meluas Haaretz V'Chivshua. Fill the world and essentially conquer it. Right? Becomes, be fruitful, multiply, fill the world and conquer it. And you will go down against the fish of the sea and the birds of the heavens and against every animal. Now that means you're supposed to conquer the world. Are you allowed to eat the animals that you're supposed to conquer? Not yet. Not yet. Humanity is not allowed to eat animals until after the flood. And that's a concession which we'll hopefully get to. But man is given a mission here, and that is to conquer the world. Rabbi Soloveitchik has a very long essay, The Lonely Man of Faith, in which he discusses this idea. He talks about Adam, what he calls Adam 1, which is the Adam who is a technological genius, who's going to conquer the world. That's the one described here in chapter 1. And then he compares this to Adam 2, which is what's described in the next chapter. So we're going to go right into that. Chapter 2 presents to us a different kind of creation. A different kind of creation. And in this creation, we're told about how God creates a garden. And if you look carefully, look on page 10. Pasuk Zayin, 3 lines from the bottom. God formed man out of dust of the earth. And he puts the breath of life into him. And the Adam becomes a person. Or a living being. Then it says, God planted this garden. And he placed man there. Okay, it's strange. Did anybody here think before reading this, just carefully, that Adam was not created in the Garden of Eden? He wasn't created in the Garden of Eden. He was created somewhere else, and then he was placed into there. So now that begs a fascinating question. Because in chapter 1, when man is described to us, we're told that God created them. B'tzelem Elohim bara'u, so God created him, rather. Zachar nekeva bara'u sam, male and female, he created them. Okay, so it sounds like there is at least two, right? Sounds like it. But over here, we clearly see only one. So what does that mean about the creation that's described in chapter 1 and the creation that's described in chapter 2? Is creation that's described in chapter 1, is that Neanderthal man? Is that distant cousin to Adam who's being thrown into the Garden of Eden? Or is it the same person that's just being described and fast forward in chapter 1, and in chapter 2 we get the real story? What is that? Not only that, but God gives him a mission, and he doesn't have to work this garden. The garden kind of works. There's a mist, there's rivers everywhere. And look in Pasuk Tezvav, page 12, Pasuk 15. God takes this person and places him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to guard it. To work it and to guard it? What do you mean to work it and to guard it? There's no work to be done. Everything works. Nothing to be done. So he has to guard it. So some commentaries say that he has to, you know, shmiras mitzvahs and things like that. That he has to create a godly kind of existence for a human being in Gan Eden. There's no question that Gan Eden is considered to be an idyllic land, an idyllic area that is uniquely suited to this particular person as long as he follows one rule. What's the rule? Careful.
Fruit.
What's the rule?
What to eat, not to eat.
Not to eat, right? Go ahead, let's take a look. Okay, God creates... He creates female. Hold on. Actually, no. He gives the rule. He gives the rule beforehand. Let's find it. Yeah, Yud Zayin. Okay? So it starts in the previous pasuk, Tez Zayin. Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al Adam Lemor. God commands the Adam, saying, you can eat from every tree of the garden, but don't eat from the tree of good knowledge, of good and evil. the tree of knowledge of good and evil, because in the day that you eat from it, you will die. Okay? Now, what does that mean? You're going to die right away? I mean, obviously not. They eat from it and they don't die. Most tamus could mean that mortality is going to be brought to the world. Not only that, not just that mortality is going to be brought to the world, but the reason why mortality is going to be brought to the world is because there's another tree in this garden, which is called the Eitz HaChaim. What's the Eitz HaChaim? It's the tree of life. What's the tree of life? That's what Ponce de Leon was looking for. He came to Florida to find it. He didn't realize we call it the Garden of Eden, but it's not actually Gan Eden. So that's the problem. So what is it? I mean, it's something that provides immortality. Okay, and we see that when they end up getting kicked out of the land, out of the garden, that there's the road, the Eitz HaChaim is blocked off, so they can't get to it anymore. So that's the idea of Mos Tamus, that on the day that you eat from it, you're going to die because you're going to be thrown out of the garden. That's the image. In fact, by the way, one of the more troubling passages in the rabbinic literature is one which I imagine everyone here is familiar with, because it's a Mishnah in Shabbos, which we read on Friday night in Shul, or if you daven at home, Bamei Madlikin. And towards the end of that chapter, it says that for three sins, women die in childbirth. Familiar with this?
Yes.
Al shalosh averos nashim esos b'shas leida son. For three sins, women die in childbirth. Al she'ein etziros benida b'chala v'dlakas haner. Because they're not careful about the rules of nida, the rules of taking challah from when you make dough, and lighting candles, Shabbos candles. So it's a very troubling passage if you misunderstand it, and too many people do. What is it saying? That if you don't follow these things, you're going to die? Come on. Come on, right, you're going to, thank you, Joyce, very well, it's true, everyone's going to die anyway. It doesn't mean that at all, because how do we know? Because there are plenty of people who do them, and they die. And plenty of people who don't do them, and they don't die. Or at least, not until, you know, the end of life, whenever that comes. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean, there's no causality in any of this stuff. What it means is that for three sins, the idea of dying in childbirth became a possibility. And that's the punishment which is given to Chava, right? And so there's a Medrash Tanchuma which actually explains this very clearly and says that each one is a mida keneged mida. It's a measure for measure for something that Chava did. Chava brought mortality to the world, so that's what nida is all about. Okay, chala means that she ruined chalaso shel adam, right? The existence or the long term existence, and that's why she has a mitzvah of chala. And the one about candle is Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam is Pasuk in Mishlei, that the candle of God is the soul of a person. And literally Nishmas, what's the next word? Adam. The soul of Adam. What did she do? By giving him to eat from the fruit, she got them both kicked out of the garden. And now he's going to die, and she's going to die. So to make it up for it, she has a mitzvah of Ner. So it's not saying that that people are going to die for not doing these mitzvahs. It's that for three sins, the three sins that Chava did, childbirth could, as the Torah says, could be potentially dangerous, and that's a reality. So we don't, you know, we can judge it all we want, but that is a reality, and it's a reality that has been about since as best as we know since the dawn of man, that it could be potentially dangerous. Okay, so what do we have here? We have this creation of the people, and they're given a job, and this leads us into the question of the next chart. So I actually did not tell you the truth. I said I was going to do the chart on the bottom, but we're not going to do that. We're going to do the middle chart first, okay? All right, so we have here sins of the people of these generations, okay? If you look on the left side of that middle chart, you're going to see you have the sin of Adam, you have the sin of Cain, and you have the sin of the generation of the flood. So what is the background to Adam's sin? That he has a job in the garden, okay? What's the job in the garden? At least insofar as chapter 2 tells us. His job is la'ovda u'lishamra, right? To watch the garden, to keep it, to work it, whatever he's supposed to do, that's his job. What is he not supposed to do? Not eat from the tree, okay? And there's a little bit of a story behind his finding his spouse and whatnot, and how they are and how she is created. The idea of her being a tzela, for example, made from a tzela. So some translate it to be as rib. I think that's more Christological influence than anything else. Although there are some commentaries who go that route. But tzela in this side, tzela in the Torah means side. We have it in the book of Shmos a number of times in the context of the creation of the Mishkan. Well, tzela haMishkan, the Yakos of Yama, whatever Kedma, you have the side of the Mishkan is called a tzela. So the idea is that if you look in chapter 1. Where it describes that Vayivra Elokim Asa Adam
that he created the man, but he created him male and female created he them. So you get an idea that the male and female, and this is actually the most popular viewpoint amongst the rabbis in the Chazal, in rabbinic works, that the female was originally attached to the male in the back, but was immobile and was not really dormant. Okay, she was just there as just as part of him, but not having a separate identity. But she was there, and so the idea was that he needed to discover that he was missing something in order to have her separated from him. And that's what Tzela HaMishkan means. That's what it means that God formed her out of a Tzela, that he had that she was attached to his back, and there was a surgical separation that created her, and then she was given life as well. Okay, anyway, so with that as the background, so we see the job in the garden is, that's the background. Then we have the sin. What's the sin? Eating from the tree. We can't get into all the details of the eating from the tree. Suffice it to say, the nachash, the snake, has an influence on Chava, and she eats from the tree. What is God's response? So now in chapter 3. Okay. God's response is, after their eyes were open, they saw that they were naked. They put on these date leaves, or fig leaves rather, to cover themselves. And God calls out to them and says, "Where are you?" Ayeka. And Adam's response, Pasuk Yud on page 16, is, "Vayomer es kol chashamati began. I heard your voice in the garden, Vayira, and I was afraid, ki yirom anochi, because I was naked, bechavei, and I hid." So God says, "Hey, where'd you get this information from? Did you eat from the tree?" And what does Adam do? Classic case. Wasn't me. She did it. And then God, you know, it's like, remember that T-shirt that says, you're standing next to somebody that says, "I'm with stupid," right? So that's what he's wearing. And she does it. Then she pulls out her own shirt and she says, "I'm with," and she points to the Nachash. Now the whole idea of the conversation that she had with the Nachash, in which she's trying to convince her that it's okay for her to eat, is fascinating. Some say it was all in her mind. The Nachash didn't really speak. There's a lot to be said about this. If you want to have a really good analysis of the Garden of Eden, you have to watch any video that Rabbi David Foreman puts together in Aleph Beta, because everything he does goes back to the Garden of Eden. Okay, that's an exaggeration, but he talks about the Garden of Eden a lot. Okay, he even wrote a book about the Garden of Eden, the sin that crouches behind the door, which describes what happens with Cain, which we're going to get to shortly anyway. So, what's God's response? Where are you? Who told you? And what's the punishment? So there's actually a three-part punishment. I'm going to skip the Nachash for today. Okay, the Nachash, although the best line that I ever heard about the Nachash's punishment is that afar tochal kol yimei chayecha, that you're going to eat the dust of the earth for the rest of your life, is that God is saying, because there's dust everywhere, I'm not going to have to deal with you anymore. Okay, for everything else, I have to worry about where its food is going to come from. I don't have to worry about you. And that means that I'm not even paying attention to you anymore. That is the ultimate punishment to the Nachash. You can also say, now that I'm thinking about it, that if you recall, the human was made out of afar. So maybe the Nachash really wanted the human in some way, whatever that means. So his way is, okay, you can have the matter which created the human, but that's all that you're going to get. Okay, woman, I mentioned what her punishment is going to be. Or her consequence is that labor, child, labor to produce a child is going to be difficult, and her relationship to her husband is going to be maybe not what she wanted it to be. And the last one is Adam Amar, and the Adam's consequence is, and take a look, it's on page 18. Arura ha'adama ba'aguracha bi'tzavon tochalena kol yimei chayecha. The ground is going to be cursed on your behalf, because of you, and you will eat from it with difficulty. What's the consequence for Adam? Essentially, that he has to have hard work in farming. And you'll notice that in addition to everything else, that his name is Adam, and he's punished with the Adama, and there's Adama, and he's told that you're going to eat difficultly from the ground until you return to the Adama. There's a heavy emphasis on the Adama. The next sin which we have is the sin of Cain. So if you look in chapter 4, so we see that Adam and Chava
have a child, and his son's name is Cain. And we're told that his name is Cain because, last line on page 18, Kanisi Ishes Hashem, that I have acquired a man with Hashem. Basically, it's the first person to ever give birth. What is this thing that just came out of me? I mean, it's unbelievable. But she sees that it's a person, and she has this opportunity to raise it, and she's like, oh my goodness, God created man? I created man. Unbelievable. And she has another child, and she says, Hevel. Now, what's his name, Hevel? This is a good question to ask in general in the Torah. Sometimes a person's name is a reflection of who they are or what they end up being, and sometimes their name is not exactly the name which they had at birth. Moshe is a great example of that. Moshe's name is not the name that he was given at birth. But there are many others as well. And Hevel, what does Hevel mean?
Nothing.
That means nothing, vanity. Why? Because he started, but he disappeared. There's no, he didn't have any children. And so there was, his existence in a sense was a nothing. To make a long story short, Cain brings his offering, Hevel brings his offering, each one bringing one to God, and Hevel's is preferred over Cain's. Cain gets really upset and he kills Hevel. Okay? So take a look at in verse 10. Test. Vayomer Hashem al Cain, Hevel achicha. Hashem says to Cain, where's Hevel, your brother? And he says, Lo yadati. I don't know. Hashem rachi anochi. Am I my brother's keeper? What's the answer? What's the answer to that? The rest of the Torah is the answer to that question. The answer is yes, you are your brother's keeper. Anyway, he says, Messi called me achicha tzokim alayim in adama. Okay, and that's God's response. God's response is, your brother's bloods cry out to us. Cry out to me from the land. And so Cain is given a punishment. And what's the punishment? Look at Pasuk Gid Aleph and note the words again. Arur Atah, you're going to be cursed. Mina Adama, from the ground. Remember, Adam was also punished from the ground. Mina Adama, from the ground that opened up its mouth to consume your brother's blood. Kisavod es. What's the word? Ha'adama. When you work the Adama, the land, it's not going to work for you. Navanad, you're going to be a wanderer. Okay, and that's Cain's punishment. Now, how much is that similar to what his parents experienced? In their own sin. I mean, think about what happened. Basically, Adam and Chava, you know, being his Azer, his partner in there, was supposed to keep the garden. That was their job. And then they ruined it all by just not following the rule that they had to follow. And they were expelled from the Adama, and they have to work the Adama now. Or, I mean, certainly Adam has to. Cain is given a job. What's the job? I mean, he's not really given a job, but he should have been given a job, which is, you are your brother's keeper. And what does he do? He kills his brother. So what does he have to do? Same thing his parents did. Work the ground and get moving. Get moving. Which just goes to show that some people don't learn a lesson. Okay? And now I'm just going to take a short pause and just take a look at the bottom chart. If you know this already, I apologize. But if you've never seen this before, so take a look. We're going to be told later on in this book, we're not going to look at it, but I'm just showing it to you here, that Cain has a bunch of generations. Now we know that Cain's generations don't make it onto the flood, unless you say that Naamah, Noach's wife, was from Cain, because the Torah says, Va'achos tuval Cain Naamah, so many say that Naamah, that lady Naamah, is mentioned because she's Noach's wife. Okay, so if that's the case, then there is a shred of Cain, of course, still existing in the sense that Naamah is Noah's wife. But take a look at Cain's family. Cain has a son named Chanoch. Chanoch has a son, Irad, Mechuyael, Metushael, Lamech, and then Lamech has three kids, Yaval, Yuval, Tuval, Cain. Okay? Take a look at the generations from Noah, from Adam until Noah, through Adam's third son, Sheth. Okay? Enosh, that's his son. Then Canaan. What does Canaan sound like? No, you have to look at the way it's spelled. It sounds like Canaan. It's spelled Kuf Yud Nun Nun, which is basically the same way as Cain is spelled, okay? Mahalalel sounds very much like Mechuyael, if you just mix up the hay and the chas, which you're allowed to do in many cases. Yered is like Irad. Irad is spelled Ayin Yud Resh Dalet, which has the name Yered in it. Chanoch, well, that's Chanoch, right? Metushelach is like Metushael, very similar. Lemech and Lemech. And Noach, I mean, Noach is unique, but Noach's job is unique in comparison to the other ones, unless you say that Noach marries Naamah, which just shows that they're a generation. Now, what's fascinating is that Yuval and Tuval Cain were each told about them that they had a profession. The Torah describes each one of them as a profession. Let me see. I can show it to you. If you look on page 22, look on page 22. Page Pasachaf, Vatelar Adas Yaval, Hu Aya Vi Yoshev Ol Mikne, that he was the first of those who dwell in tents and breed cattle. Vatelar Adas, I'm sorry, Vashem Achiv Yuval, Hu Aya Vi Kol Tefes Kinor Ve'ugav. To Yuval was the one, he was the first to make musical instruments, the harp and the flute. Last one, Vichilagam, he yodas Tuval Kayin, Lotesh Kol Chorish Nechosh Subarzel, Tuval Kayin, sharpened cutting implements in copper and iron. Okay. Now, I don't know about music on the ark, but all these other stuff, who's using them? They're co-conspirator, but they're parallel in cousinhood. Okay, their eighth cousin, Noach. That said, he has to use these kinds of materials in order to build the ark. So you see that there is that parallel. What's the point, though? The point is that Cain's family had the potential. Yeah, Cain sinned. Okay, let's leave that for what it is. But Cain's family had the potential to be the saviors of humanity. It's the same people, at least the same names. But there was something in the Cain group which was anti-anything. Meaning anti being able to carry that through. And it stems from Cain, and it was carried through to here. I mean, just take a look at what's the last thing we see about the family of Cain. Look in Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Lamech says to his wife, Adav Tzilaj, Ma'an Kolina, She Lamech Hasein, Masi Kisha, Rakti Fitzibel, Yel Lachavurasi. He says, I committed murder. What does this mean? Seven generations later, count the generations. What's the Cain family still doing? Murdering people. Well, if that's what your MO is, then guess what you represent? You represent the opposite of what we need. And that's part of the problem that Noach is faced with when he comes onto the scene. Okay. Finally, we go on to the next page. Okay, the Torah gives us the genealogy from Adam until Noach, as we've seen before, as I mentioned at the outset. And now we go to chapter 6. Vayhi Noach ben Chamesh Meos Shana. I'm on page 26. Okay, Noach is 500 years old, and he has Shem Chamed Yafes. And Ki Echel Adam L'Rov Al Pnei Adamah V'Nos Yuldu Lahem. So the people, so note the word Ha'adam. What's Ha'adam? Ha'adam refers to humanity, right? Humanity is growing population wise, but those who have, they're having daughters. But your ubnei Elohim is benoso Adam ki tavos heina, that the bnei Elohim. What does that mean? Right. So it doesn't mean the sons of God, because that would be a whole lot of Jesuses, right? Okay. That's not good. So the commentaries have a lot of fun trying to figure out who these people are. Are they the sons of judges? Because we have evidence in the Torah that the word Elohim refers to judges. Are they the sons of the people of the family of Shase? Because those were considered to be a higher level. And what do they see? The Benosa Adam Kitavos Heina Vekulam Nashim Kol Shabacharu. There was a mixture of, I guess, relations that were not really supposed to happen. Okay? And the way in which people were going about having their relationships was more flingy than committed. And so what does God say? Between all the murder that I'm seeing and all of the rampant sexualism that I'm seeing, Lo Yadon Ruchi Ba'adam Le'olam B'Shagam U'Basar V'Yu Yimav Me'a V'Yashrim Shana. I'm done with this. Okay? And so what we see, an important thing which is being mentioned here, we have two words describing humanity. One is Adam, and one is Basar. What do Adam and Basar have in common? They're very materialistic. What's Adam? Literally means from the ground, right? Adam, Adama. What's Basar? Meat, flesh. Okay, if you describe a person as being meat or flesh, you're not really being very nice, right? Right? That's not the way. When we talk about describing a person, we want to talk about who is this, you know, so-and-so. So we typically do it, excuse me, we typically do it by way of, by the person's name, and we want to define the person by the name. We look at a person's face, and we see, you know, can we see into the eyes or the window to the soul, right? So can we see into the person and appreciate the person? That's the way we want to relate to people. But if people are being viewed as Adam and Basar, that's part of the problem that humanity is facing, that they're not appreciating on a deeper level what other human beings are and what the potential of other human beings could be. What they're doing is, how can you fill my desire? That's what the B'nai Elohim and B'nos Adam and the way that God describes Basar is depicted to us. And that is a theme which is carried through into Parshas Noach. Because if you take a look in Parshas Noach, right, we see it at the end of the Parshas just describes how Noach Matzachim Einei Hashem, he found favor in God's eyes. But if you look here, what does God say? Pasuk Gimel, page 30. Vayomer lehil Noach, Kates call Basar Balafanai Kimelar Tzchamas Mevnehem. That what do I see now as being the end of it's the end of call Basar. Humanity is being described as flesh. That's it. That's the way God sees people, because that's the way people see people. If people only see people as this is a challenge that the generation of that time were faced with. And Noach, you know, I mean, I don't want to be critical of Noach, because I'm not there. We're only given with Noach, we're given very little information about Noach, even though there's a whole parsha dedicated to his name. But we're given very little information. And Noach, maybe he's trying his best, maybe he's not, but, you know, he builds an ark and nothing really changes. So God essentially has declared now that what's going to happen is the end of Basar. And if you look, in fact, when the Mabul comes, okay, when the flood comes, we'll see what happens. Okay, it's page 34. Sorry, top of page 36. Okay, as it's describing the depth of the flood and how far it went, etc., and how high it went. Vayigva kol basar harameis al aretz ba'of uva behema v'chaya v'chol asheretz asheretz aretz v'chol aretz v'chol ha'adam. So Adam is included in all the basar. Okay, that's the way you have. Now, it's described as everything having kol shenishmas ruach hayim be'pav, anything that had the breath of life in its nostrils. But essentially, it's Adam and it's Basar. Take a look at the next line. So we see that theme again, which is coming up in this whole generation of the flood. All these sins that are depicted here in this middle chart on the page which I gave you have a heavy emphasis on the word Adama, and that the people are coming from Adama, and that where are they going to? Right? It's like... it's like God said to Adam at the time when he says that you're going to die one day. He says, "Afarata ve'lafarta shuv ki mimenu lukachta. You came from dust, you're going to return to dust, and you're going to return to the ground because that's where you were taken from." So this is a very simple reminder of how the background, and it's not so much the background, but how all of these sins that we see here, whether it's Adam, whether it's Cain, whether it's the generation of the flood, they all stem from one kind of space. And it's the heavy emphasis on the word Adama, which reminds us that maybe that is not what the focus of life is supposed to be about. It's not supposed to be about earthiness and fleshiness and things of that nature, because all the people who focused on that ended up losing that and ended up getting punished in some way that was reflective of how they had sinned. Okay? Adam had taken something from that had grown from the Adama. Cain had also brought something from that had grown from the Adama. And where did he put Hevel? Back into the Adama. And the existence of the people of the flood was all about Basar and Adama. Okay? Which brings us to the light at the end of the light at the end of the tunnel. And the light at the end of the tunnel is what happens after the flood. Now, we are given the generations of Noah's family, Shem, Cham, and Yafes. We're not going to go into that now. But we are also told in chapter 11 about the Tower of Babel. Okay? Now, the Tower of Babel is a fascinating section of the Torah. It's 9 psukim. I can tell you just by giving you a very brief anecdote. So Rabbi Mordechai Breuer, Zichrono Lebracha, who was an incredible teacher and a very influential innovator in terms of thought and how to study Chumash, who passed away a number of years ago. So when I was in yeshiva in Israel, he gave a chug. Once a week, he would give a class, and he had started 10 years earlier with the beginning of Bereishis. And we were up to this section here, chapter 11. Okay, I remember we spent 4 months, okay, an hour a week, 4 months on these 9 psukim. Okay, so just to give you an idea of what can be gleaned from it. So now just sit back, because I'm going to summarize all that right now. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. The main thing that we have to take from, there are many main things, I suppose, that we could take from a section like this. But insofar as creating this picture of what happened from Adam until Noah, and from Noah until Abraham, the Tower of Babel, more than anything, I would say, creates for us an ideal, but an ideal that's a little misguided. How so? They get together, and if you read through the text, it's actually almost inspirational, right? Read through it. I'll read it in English just for the sake of time. The whole earth was of one language and of common purpose. It's nice. It came to pass when they migrated from the east, they found a valley in the land of Shinar and settled there. They said to one another, come, let's make bricks, burn them in fire. And the bricks served them as stone. The bitumen served them as mortar. And they said, come, let us build us a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed across the whole earth. Now, if you look at that from an objective standpoint, that's very nice. They're united, they're friendly, they like each other, they want to work together. Fantastic. Hashem descended to look at the city and tower which the sons of man built. And Hashem said, behold, they are one people with one language for all, and this they begin to do. And now should it not be withheld from them all they propose to do? Come, let us ascend, and there confuse their language, that they should not understand one another's language. So why would God be upset that they're all sharing one language and they all seem to be on the same page? Well, I mean, that goes into the deeper question of what, in fact, their goal was. But one of the things which is in the text, but I kind of glossed over, is where they say, let us make a name for ourselves. Okay, what does it mean to make a name for ourselves? It means to say that we have arrived and that we are powerful and that we want to demonstrate to everybody that not to mess with us. But, you know, what do the rabbis say that they were trying to do?
Themselves.
But wage war against God. Now, what does that mean? Who cares? You wage war against God. That's funny, right? Wage war against God, earthquake, you lose. I mean, it doesn't take much for God to be able to do that. But the point is that it's an attitude. It's an attitude which may have, I mean, what's the whole idea of one language and one common purpose? You can make an argument that's totalitarianism. And if that is in fact the case, I mean, the whole idea of Shinar and what that land of Shinar is and who was the king there, there's a lot of hints to the idea that this king here is, that the person in charge here is Nimrod, and that he is not a good guy, and that what he's trying to do is just create a power for himself to fill in a void of what literally exists because there's nobody else there. And they are trying to make this all about them. And God says that's not how we're supposed to do. You have to remember that there is a purpose in this world, and the purpose is to recognize what the creator of the world is, who the creator of the world is, why you're even here, what's your purpose in life. And it's not about power for man, it's not about unity. There is a beauty in a certain element of diversity which the world needs to have. If everybody were the same, I know a rabbi who runs the yeshiva, and he told me that if he were 100% successful with everybody, he'd have to close his yeshiva. What does that mean? It means that it nothing works for everybody. It can't be that everybody is all of a sudden, this is perfect and kumbaya. It doesn't work that way. People are different. That's the way God created humanity. People are going to be different. The fact that they're trying to create something in which everybody's the same, it's like Metropolis, that movie from the 1920s, in which maybe I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, but this is a dark film. It's a, what do they call that? It's a... Not film noir. It's a kind of dystopia. Yes. If you go on YouTube, you'll see like a bunch of faceless and nameless people all just marching in lockstep. This is before Nazis, by the way, but basically through the machine of through a machine of something. Yeah, I mean, it's just, but it's a dystopian that. Okay, that's fine. It's a silent film. It's okay. You have to, you got to study silent film. But that's not what we're trying to create. And so what Noach, what the image of what Noach did, which is Noach Matzochein Bein Hashem, ends up carrying as a model in its own way for Avram, who rounds out the book. We go from the generations after that story. We go out from the generations from Noach all the way until Avram. And what's Avram's mission? If you go through the very beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, and this is where we're going to begin next week, you're going to see that everywhere Avram goes, what does Avram do? Vayikra, B'Shem, Hashem. He calls that in God's name. These guys try to make Naaseh Lanu Shem. We want to make a name for ourselves. But what Avram does is says, no, that's not how the world works. That's not how the world benefits. Right? If you're going to make for yourself a name, the only thing that can result from that is flood. Now maybe God said he's not going to flood anymore. Okay, there are other ways that God can destroy, and we actually see that in the city of Sodom. It's not going to take much time before we see a city being destroyed, because what were the people doing? The exact same problem. They wanted everybody in Sodom to be exactly the same. They wanted everybody in Sodom to follow the exact same rules. They wanted everybody in Sodom to, you know, A, B, C, D. And it doesn't. You have to give people a little freedom to live their own kind of lives. It's not to say there aren't rules, but. Even in there being rules, there has to be a little bit of freedom, and people should not feel a sense of conformity only. And but remember that there is one area of a sort of conformity, and that is to remember God's place in this world, and that without God there is no world. And that's what Avram came to essentially overturn, that attitude that wasn't really focused on God. And that's why Avram becomes such a success that he is, so much so that even today the major religions of the world, you know, whether they like the Jews or they don't like the Jews, they all revere Avram. Everybody reveres Avraham. And that is it's a tremendous credit to what Avraham created and worked out, in contrast to those who came before him. So just to complete where we finish where we began. So when Rabbi Sachs said in his in that speech, he said, you look through the first 11 chapters and you don't find a Jew. He says, that is correct. But what you do find is man experimenting and man failing. And what happened as a result was that Avraham emerges and says, look, I'm going to look at all the failures that took place before me, and I'm going to say, how can I go in a different direction? So that man can not just survive, but man can be elevated, man can become lofty. So much so that, remember when Avraham was trying to buy a burial plot for Sarah, what do they call him? They say, Nesi Elokim Atah B'Zocheinu, you're a prince of God among us. One guy! What kind of, what family does he have? What reputation does he have? One guy. They're saying, you are the most inspirational person. Well, that's Avram's goal, and that's our goal, and that's our job. And hopefully now that we're past the first part of Bereishis, we can focus on what is supposed to be the building of Am Yisrael through the book of Bereishis.